Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday, and welcome to Sunday Civics, the podcast for the civically engaged here on SiriusXM Urban View, Channel 126. I'm your host and civics teacher, Eljoy Williams. And on today's episode, we're going to feature my interview with the exceptional Nell Merlino, founder of Take Our Daughters to Work Day. She's an organizer, an advocate, an author, and she joins us for a civics lesson about getting young people involved. So you'll hear her remarkable story and get inspired to take civic action. Joining me, as usual, is my civic accomplice, June like the month, Moses like the Bible,
Eljoy Williams, political strategist,
and joining us later, Larise coming. Larise late, so she'll she'll be in for the Nell interview.
She's a lawyer.
She's a lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you guys for joining us. I hope I've been getting. Have you been seeing the tweets and the emails and everything that you guys are really enjoying this show? I really, really appreciate those of you who are shouting us out.
Thank you.
Who are live tweeting and having the conversation with us during the show on Sundays. I appreciate you. And, you know, for those of you who do use social media and you'll see that when you shout us out, you know, we communicate back.
Yes. We don't
and shout you out. You know what I'm saying? And then for those of you who actually take the step forward and review the show, we love you. So I have a new listener review. This is from Pet Pluto. Sunday Civics is awesome. Everything is awesome. For those of you who watch a Lego movie. So Pet Pluto says, I love this podcast. It helps provide concrete actions to take, and the conversations are refreshing and informative. Eljoy was one of my favorite co-hosts on Blacken It Up. Shout out to Blacken It Up. And I'm so excited to be able to listen to her and her views again. So remember, when you submit a five-star review, I'll read it on the show and shout you out. So shout out to Pet Pluto for your five-star review.
Thank you.
And for those of you who you're listening right now on SiriusXM, maybe, but you can also get the show on demand on Sirius on Demand. You can also download past episodes on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Google Play. Like, you know, but if you go to the website at sundaycivics.org, you can go there and see what other platforms you want to subscribe on. The subscription numbers actually help us. We can see that people are listening to the show. And for those of you who are listening on SiriusXM, Urban View Channel 126, shout out to the fam. You can also send us a quick review and feedback on the website.
Let them know you like us.
All right. So there's some other housekeeping, right, June?
Oh, most definitely. Now, remember, you can catch new episodes of Sunday Civics right here on SiriusXM Urban View Channel 126 every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Or you can listen on demand. So remember that. Now, if you visit our website at sundaycivics.org and subscribe and get access to, you'll get access to past shows, videos, guests, videos of our guests, resources for you to use, lots of stuff to get you civically engaged. You can also subscribe to our email newsletter, very important, and on the website. But if you are out and about in the streets, yes, guess what? You can use your phone and you can text us. What? Text the word join, J-O-I-N, all caps, 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 to 2407-CIVICS or 240-724-8427. And we will add you to our email list.
So, what's that number again?
I'm sorry, it's 240-724-8427.
All right.
All right. And lastly, we need your support. We need your help to and support us with our efforts to help us keep producing this show and creating quality civics education. Y'all like that? We like that. We love it. Now, you can make a one-time donation or become a civic patron for as little as $3 a month. Now, remember, our civic patrons, they receive cool extras like a lot of good stuff. So become a civic patron. Anyway, and you can head on over to our online shop, get a stylish shirt, a nice sweatshirt, a mug, a bag, sundaycivics.org, make a purchase, and all these things help us to keep Sunday Civics going. So thank
you. Listen, so if you need to become a civic patron really quick, because I'm getting ready to send handwritten.
You're writing?
I'm sending handwritten little
notes. Didn't
you
send cookies?
To people who are civic patrons. Yeah. So become a civic patron. Go to the website, SundayCivics.org, and find out more. But I have a couple of... I have a civic docket for you, June.
What happened?
I have some stories to talk to you about.
Oh, well, I'm going to sit back and relax because, I like hot takes, so go for it.
I'm going to talk to you about young people...
What did they do?
Taking civic action for themselves.
Oh, well, God bless them. They may save us all.
Yeah. So shout out to these sisters, first of all. This is in Maryland. These young sisters, I think they're like 8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like 8 and 10 or something like that. These are babies.
Oh, got more sense than us grown folk.
So the babies was out going to learn how to hunt and shoot. Something near and dear to your heart, June. So they were out and about learning how to shoot. And so they wore pink.
Hey, you won't mistake them for a deer or something else and shoot them by
accident. Yeah, well, so normally people that go out, I think there are laws in certain places when you're going out that you have to wear bright color clothes.
Mm-hmm. That neon orange.
So that the neon orange so that people can see you so that you won't be like our former vice president.
Shooting people in the face? I don't know what that's about.
Okay. So they wore their pink. To go out and practice shooting in the wilderness. And it turns out that they were told they had to put on the orange thing.
What?
So they can go out and shoot. And they were like, wait a minute.
No, but people get shot in the orange thing. Like, they're trying like, something new.
People can see me. In fact, people can probably see me better.
Aren't animals colorblind? Like, they don't care about pink? I don't know.
Okay,
we should ask Cokie. I don't know about that.
So it's Brooke and Paige. Were the kids, right?
Hi,
so they
Brooke,
took a hunting safety course. Oh. Their dad wanted them to learn how to use guns safely. It was probably like a hunting family or anything like that, right? And it turns out their pink stuff didn't meet safety requirements, which says that they can only wear bright orange. So they went back home.
Paige and Brooke gonna change the law, aren't they?
And they did some research, and they found that actually in Europe and Wisconsin... They actually suggest bright pink as a second option that animals can hardly see it. As you were saying, they're colorblind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that also is more noticeable to other hunters out in the wilderness.
Makes sense to me.
So you know what they did next?
What?
They talked to their legislator.
Good for them. I got grown folks who won't even go talk to the legislator.
Exactly. So they went to their state legislator.
Good for you, girls.
And they said, we need you to change the law. So that we could wear pink when we going out in hunting.
Go,
and
Paige.
The legislator actually took, a Republican legislator, they're, you know, family Republican, they actually took up the bill. The sisters went to the hearing and testified.
Good for them.
Listen.
Good. I'm so excited.
They were talking to other men, and the bill passed the committee and everything.
Wonderful. See, now, young people with education, they can shoot guns and wear pink. This is fabulous.
And they done went and talked to their legislator about wearing pink when they going out and hunting. And so now they can wear, shout out to Brooke and Paige.
Is that their first civic action?
I think Brooke and Paige did their first civic action. They helped pass a law and they ain't even eligible to vote yet.
God bless these. Oh, well, there's somebody going to be the president. Which one, Brooke or Paige? Because come on now. They're doing things, and I've got grown people who will complain but will not go and speak to the local senator or the congressman. Because we're watching every day people go and lay down in offices. These young ladies, they made a change. Good for them, girls. Good for you. Good for you. I love it.
Yeah.
And they're learning to shoot guns. Yes. Yes. Birdman hands.
Oh, Lord, Birdman hands. I got some more for you, though.
Yes.
In Kansas, my birth state. Oh. Did you know I was born in Kansas?
I feel like you just belong to Brooklyn.
Okay. But I was born, I was physically born in Manhattan, Kansas. My father was in the military and was, you know, stationed on the military base out there. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I was born. And I came to New York when I was 3.
Oh, so you don't know Kansas.
I don't really know.
You're not in Kansas anymore.
No, I don't really.
If you click your heels, you're not going back.
I have like one memory, and it's of going underneath the table during like a tornado or some kind of something.
Oh, well, that's not a good
memory.
And
I don't know if that's also conflated with, like, stories of, like, Dorothy or not. Like, I don't know if that memory is real.
We're going to say it is. That's what happened. Don't go back to Kansas. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What happened in Kansas?
I don't know if that memory... Do you guys have that... Those of you who are listening, you have that sometimes? You have this memory in your head and you could swear it's real, and then you say it to your parents or family member and they're like, that ain't happened.
No.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Now, what happened with the sixth teenage?
Okay, so in Kansas, yeah, there are teenagers running for governor.
I'm sorry, they're doing what? They're not running for the basketball team. They're not trying to be cheerleaders. No. What are they doing? They're not running for candy?
No. And not only in Kansas, I think in Vermont, there's a teenager running for governor in Vermont. So it turns out that these states didn't have a age requirement for running for governor.
You can't drink, running for office, smoke, but you can be the governor.
They didn't have an age minimum.
They got one now, don't they?
Well, so soon as the young people started announcing candidacy, girl, they didn't even had, they had a candidates form at high school gym.
Oh, they was like, we're getting all these old folks out the paint. Let's go. They're kind of like those robots. They're all getting together and they're just getting us old folks out the paint. Did y'all change those rules?
Yeah.
What's happening?
So immediately after that, legislator actually introduced a bill that says that you actually have to be a voting age and a resident of the state by with 4 years.
4 years?
Yeah. In order to run. But shout out to those young people who are just like, hey, listen.
We're going to do it ourselves. These old people are messing it up and we want a world. So we're going to run for governor and stuff.
You know what it reminds me of is there's actually a movement about lowering the voting age to 16. Remember, we didn't start out with 18 as the voting age. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there's a movement about lowering the age to 16, particularly in municipal elections. And some of the arguments that young people make is that, you know, sometimes there are things on the ballot or there are issues that directly affect us and we don't have any say in the matter.
They can't talk to their parents and make their parents vote for what they need?
Listen, huh? I tell young people all the time, you have more sway in your household than you think. Because just think about, like, what food is bought in the house. It's based upon what you eat and what you don't eat. Because, mm-hmm, you know, that cereal lobby is real.
But there might be food in a box. You know, we're getting food in a box.
Oh, God.
Food in a box. Mm. I need some powdered milk in a box.
Oh, my goodness.
No? God bless you, children.
Yeah.
Run for office.
Yeah. So we're going to talk more about how young people can, you know, intersect with government before they have the right to vote. Because we spend a lot of time telling young people they can't do stuff until they turn 18 or they can't do something until they turn 21. But there are things that they can do, as Brooke and Paige did.
Yes, go girls, go. Pink, pink, pink.
There are things that you can do to intersect with government, to advocate, to lobby on young people's behalf before you have a right to vote. And so when we come back, we'll talk more about that because, mm-hmm, you know, civic engagement is learned behavior.
Yes.
And parents and all of those in the community have to model that for young people. So and then support young people. Imagine, you know, the support that was given to Brooke and Paige in order to get that law even introduced, let alone passed.
Somebody had to drive them somewhere. They don't have a driver's license.
So, you know, you have the ability to encourage young people to take civic action in their community. And so when we come back, we'll talk more about that. Welcome back, folks. Welcome back to Sunday Civics here on Sirius XM Urban View Channel 126. I'm your host and civics teacher, Eljoy Williams, and with me, as usual, is my civic accomplice. Larice still ain't here.
No, she's still late. She coming, though. Hold on. She a lawyer.
She a lawyer. Oh, Lord. So I want to continue this conversation about how we engage young people And particularly starting with what we don't do with them, because civics has to be practiced. Just like for adults, you don't, you know, just come out of the womb. You don't just, okay, I'm an adult and automatically I know what I'm supposed to do, what I'm supposed to, which party I'm supposed to select. That doesn't happen automatically. Those skills must be practiced. They have to be taught to you. You have to, you know how to interact with government, how to interact with legislators. And the only way you do that is by practicing, by learning. And I don't think we do a good job at integrating young people into that process, partly because we tell young people to wait. Wait until you grown. Wait until you out my house. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, we tell them to wait. Wait until it's time for you to vote. Or, you know, all of that thing. And so I wrote a piece for the Parents League of New York. They have their annual academic journal that goes to parents and teachers. And the title of it is Democracy is Learned Behavior. You can actually get a copy of this from our website at sundaycivics.org. Go to the website sundaycivics.org and you can read the detail of this. But, you know, I'll just read an excerpt from it, June. Do you remember how you learned civics and political participation?
Oh, Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah. So for it could have been American government in high school, Schoolhouse Rock taught you how a bill becomes a law, or maybe your school held a mock election of French fries versus tater tots to explain the presidential election to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you may have an unforgettable rhyme in your head to remember the preamble. Remember that one. Or you may have participated in the Lincoln-Douglas style debates in school.
Mm-hmm.
But how much of those lessons actually prepared you for participating in the democracy as an adult?
Not many. I just did what my daddy told me.
Right. So when you first registered to vote and you had to choose a party, did you give thought to what your own political values are? Remember, you're 18. You know, most people, did you know what your political values were?
What my daddy said.
Mm-hmm. And even those who take political science in undergrad, if you, you know, go to college.
I did.
They, you know, didn't give you the tools for self-governance. They told you how things are supposed to work, how things are laid out, primarily on the federal level,
mm-hmm.
but didn't go, you know, maybe they say things are replicated on the state and local level. Maybe that's as far as they've gone. And if you had a great teacher, maybe you also intersected mm-hmm. with your mayor. Maybe you also went to a city council meeting or anything like that. But we're not doing an adequate job of preparing generations to take part in government. You know who does do that? Wealthy people do that.
Mm. They have the money to.
And in the time and expertise, possibly. But that just will ensure
mm-hmm.
that there's a certain class that always has power in government and in our society. And if anything,
mm-hmm.
those of us who are working class, those of us who are struggling,
mm-hmm.
right, we need to have greater voice and greater participation in government to help equalize the field. Because otherwise, we're stuck in this perpetual state of mm-hmm. wealthy people having more power.
Okay.
So we have to teach our kids about democracy. I argue in the piece that it's just like language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a skill that's learned by practice and by usage. So how do you teach a child your language? You talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
You repeat things to them and you have them repeat it back to you. So the principles of the democracy, we have to model those things. And so if you only vote every 4 years,
mm-hmm.
then what your child learns is that elections only matter every 4 years.
Okay. But that's so it's good to take them to the polls all throughout to, right. for everything else, for the mayor, for the dog catcher, for the judge.
Explaining to them, you know, explaining to them, they may ask you a question like, you know, why can't I go to the library on the weekends? Well, the library is closed on the weekends. Well, why is it closed on the weekends? Because the local government doesn't provide enough funding for it to open 7 days a week.
Ah, see, people who have money can do all that. People who don't have money just go shut up and do what I said. The library's closed. Just shut up. Sit down. Shut up.
Well, we're not just going to put that on.
Oh, okay. All right. Never mind. Never mind.
We're not just going to put that on that. But to explain to young people, similar thing, explaining why they go to the school that they go to, particularly if you chose a charter school or if you send them to a private school. Why did you make that decision? Is it because the schools in your community, you don't think they're adequate? Well, why aren't they adequate?
Mm. And can you change them?
Right. So it explaining in that way. And so children, you know, people hear this all the time. They model what they see. And so if you yourself aren't involved, engaged, you don't talk about these things, if you don't go participate in some way, if you've never been to your elected official, they've never seen you call or write or engage with elected officials or others, they've never seen you go to a rally, you've not taken them with them, right? Mm-hmm. Then they don't know any of that stuff to be able to engage at a later date. And then they'll do like most people, they become politicized in college if they go to college.
Oh, college is the radical place.
Right.
More than just
and then
the
they
lefties.
Come home and they're like, you know, yelling at you on why you didn't tell me to not fall for the banana in the tailpipe.
No, I just let the old folks be and just moved on because I'm going to be a radical now. I went to college.
But not only that, but also nurturing your child's voice when they learn something and they want to take action on the issue.
So don't tell them be quiet. Don't tell them shut up.
I mean,
don't tell them sit down.
Sometimes you need to tell kids shut up, but sometimes, not all the time. Sometimes they're wise beyond their years.
So you need to find some patience so that this way you can nurture this.
You know, sometimes. And I'll give you an example.
Okay.
So I argue this in the piece. So one of my girlfriend's daughters, she's already defined for herself that she, you know, she cares about climate change and being better to the earth and the environment. And so she learned about this in school. Then she comes home and she like wants to recycle and like do all that kind of stuff or whatever. So quite often her parents do tell her, just do what I say. but they also, you know, invested and affirmed her voice. So they allowed her to have a contribution, right? In that they'll recycle and how they will, you know, reduce waste in their household and things like that. So they didn't do the extra step where she wanted to do like solar panels and like and compost and all that kind of craziness. Mm. But they allowed her some say. So that one teaches her that she has a voice that is, you know, that she can use. She also gathered like her classmates together on a project in the school, right? So that's her organizing skills, right? And then for her parents to be able to talk to her about why, you know, why the trash happens this way or things of that nature, you know, gives her a way to be active and engaged. And that's all, you know, that's all we need to do. It's part of the thing that we need to do is sort of model this civic behavior for young people. So when we come back, I'm bringing in this conversation Nell Merlino.
I love her.
Yeah. So Nell is going to we're going to hear Nell's story. She's going to talk about founding Take Your Daughter to Work Day, which is now Take Your Child to Work Day. But she also has a background and a story about being engaged and being involved when she was young because her parents were engaged and young. And so, you know, we'll hear more of her story when we come back.
It's a good story.
Welcome back to Sunday Civics, the podcast for the civically engaged. This is your host, L. Joy Williams, here on Sirius XM Urban View, Channel 126. And I have a very important conversation coming up with someone who I admire a lot. In today's conversation, we're talking about civic engagement as learned behavior. It's something that you have to practice. Someone has to teach you. Someone has to tell you the rules and give you the information that you need in order to participate in this democracy. And here to have this conversation with us is Nell Marlino. She is the founding chairwoman of the Personal Black Box Trust, and she's leading a movement to champion personal data independence and set new standards of control, value, and privacy for emerging human data rights. But how I met Nell is actually working with her for the Count Me In for Women's Economic Independence, which she launched and founded. And she also created Take Our Daughters to Work Day. Nell, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Lovely to be here with
now
you.
Now it's it started off as Take Your Daughters to Work Day, and now it's like take your just all your kids.
It's actually Take Your Daughters and Sons to Work Day. But I am happy to announce that I am working on a 25th year sequel to Take Our Daughters to Work Day.
Wow. So let's dial back a second and tell me, what was the genesis of creating Take Our Daughters to Work Day in the first place?
It was my desire for girls to be seen as something other than cute. Mm. There was, it was an era in the 90s where there were 12-year-old girls on the front of Vogue who were all made up, who looked like 16, and it's going on now with social media, but there was a real heavy emphasis and continues to be on, as girls start to turn into women, they become sex objects, and how do we help them appreciate that there's so much more to them? And I thought of it at my father's retirement dinner because I remembered who I met and what I learned from those people and what I learned watching both of my parents work. That gave me a different sense of myself. In addition to being cute, I also knew that I was capable of doing things. And I think we still have to remind girls regularly how capable they are.
Now, in the context of where we are now, in terms of the ongoing conversation of equal pay, and that's everything from in a C-suite to entertainment, to hospitality jobs, right? You know, the conversation of equitable coverage and equitable payment for women is an ongoing conversation.
Yep.
What was different in the 90s? I know that women like yourself and others that I know of personally were talking about these issues. It wasn't a, you know, mainstream conversation, but there were articles and books and things here and there. There, you had the workshop starting, you know, during that time as well. What are some of the differences you see between then and now?
There are more laws on the books about equal pay, but more importantly, and I think we've just seen it at the Golden Globes, at the trial of the Olympic doctor, there are finally enough women in positions of power where it is increasingly difficult to not enforce the law. Because equal pay is there, and we're all working toward it, but you now have, you have women like Deborah Messing on the red carpet at the Golden Globes calling out Ryan Seacrest about the unequal pay at on Entertainment Tonight. I mean, it is now kind of impossible to be anywhere without someone calling it out. Both in terms of pay and also sexual harassment and all that stuff, because there are laws about it now. Big corporate boards are uncomfortable with it. They aren't as uncomfortable with pay that's not equal yet, but it's coming. So I see, for 40 years of doing this work, there are now enough women in enough places who talk to each other, and enough men, I think, who also get some of this, that there is a greater consciousness and a greater effort to equalize the pay and things like that. So I am, you know, eternally frustrated, but also most encouraged at the attention that is being focused on the situation.
You know, me, myself and Larie often talk about in the instance of addressing racial disparities of, you know, I don't really need someone to like personally like me and accept them, you know, accept me into their heart and everything like that. I just need laws on the books, right? And so in this instance, we see how important laws on the books changes it eventually changes culture. But at first, you're putting laws on the books to enforce equality and equity and funding. And yes, that's an important part. It's something we bring up on the show here all of the time. Now, I want to also dial back a second, because you have a great career besides being the founder of Take Our Daughters to Work Day. You actually are the daughter of a former state senator.
Yes.
And you mentioned in, you know, you created this event at your father's retirement party. What are some of the things you experienced or you were open to, you would say, by participating in government, participating in advocacy with your parents?
What I remember first so vividly was every summer we had to eat dinner at 5 o'clock, because at the time you had to go to City Hall to register to vote. And my parents worked on some kind of mobile voter registration drive where they took either a trailer or a van, or they opened up a school in the evening to register voters locally so they didn't have to go down to City Hall and miss work. My parents did this every summer until my father was in the legislature and passed the first postcard registration law in the country. Mm. So it was, I remember it because we had to come in from playing early. We had to eat our supper, and we sat in the back of the car while they went door to door. And sometimes, you know, we handed out papers, or sometimes we stayed at the school because, you know, a friend of my parents was there and we'd stay there and, you know, color or do something. But it was, and as we got older, we went door to door with them. And I heard the most incredible things I will never forget. People coming to the door, and they always sent couples, you know, so that people weren't nervous. And if a woman came to the door, they would say things like, "My husband won't let me." Mm. Or, "My husband does the voting." I remember coming away from those things and looking at my mother and my father and saying, "What is that?" Because I knew my parents both went to vote. It was not something so, and the fear, because I remember being in immigrant neighborhoods with them and people who wouldn't open the door for fear. They thought that people would know how they voted. Mm-hmm. They came from places where people knew how they voted. And my father spoke fluent Italian, so he would talk to them, because sometimes it was Italian, sometimes it was Spanish. But there was, I saw all of that. And it was very clear to me, Election Day in our household was a holiday. I mean, we got up early, we baked things the night before, because I don't know about your polling place, there was always a bake sale at our polling place.
Now, okay, so this is a pet peeve of mine.
What?
Because New York City has stopped, because I used to go to the poll. I would love it, because the school, it was either the PTA or, you know, the kids, you know, raising money for something.
Right.
And they would have baked goods out there for you while before and or after you vote.
Right.
Well, New York City changed laws for the bake sale. This was under Bloomberg. And you couldn't sell like homemade things. You could buy things, and they had to be wrapped individually. There was like all kinds of rules. So it essentially stopped bake sales, because there were too many rules on what you, and then you had to label everything in case people were allergic to stuff, which is important,
understood.
But there were so many things that they just stopped altogether. So there are no more bake sales when you go to vote in New York City. I used to love that. I would come with,
you know,
come with
I've
my
never
singles.
Seen them. I've never seen them in New York City. I grew up in Trenton.
Okay.
And it was, but we were baking the night before, or we knew that, you know, Celeste was going to make whatever, so we would make sure we got it was, and then election night was gigantic, because
right.
My father was always somewhere counting votes, or he was running, so he was trying to figure out, and my mother was a committee woman. My mother registered voters. She was a committee when my mother ran for office eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I watched a lot of that.
This now, is really encouraging as a parent who, like my husband and I, we try really hard to make sure our kids are involved in all of the actions that we do and all of the civic engagement that we have. So to see the end result is that, okay, they'll stick with it and they will be able to create awesome things with their experiences, and that will help sort of shape the person that they turn out to be in a really positive way. As a parent, I am really encouraged, because I'm like, okay, I will keep dragging them to all of the meetings, to all of the events and spaces.
It is. It is fascinating to be in a group of grown-ups who are doing things that you know are impacting your community.
Right, right.
I mean, also for me, I have always loved politics because it was the place in our city where everybody got together. There wasn't, you know, this neighborhood and that neighborhood. You all had to come together to be involved in that. And it's why I think I've always gravitated to politics, because you get to know everybody, you know, and be with all your neighbors, you know, and people you may not socialize with. But if you're for politics, you know, you come together. So I've always loved that part.
Now, fast forward to, you know, as an adult career.
Yeah.
You also did some union organizing.
Yes, I did.
And we're doing a show in a couple of weeks talking about the origins of unions and how important an important part they play in middle class and working class neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
And particularly for ethnic groups in the United States. And you organized women.
Yes, I did.
You have a recurring theme going
on
here.
Yes, I do. Well, I will also say, I don't think the fellas thought that the girls could organize the boys. So there was, but I started in the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union because they couldn't go door to door without a woman. Because they were organizing women, mm-hmm. you know, so they needed you, whether they liked it or not. And where I really got going, though, was with when the hospital workers got the right to unionize, which was not until 1974. So before that, it was against the law for them to unionize, and none of them could afford even health care, let alone, you know, a decent living. So,
and this was also in Brooklyn.
This was in Brooklyn. Yeah. I was all over then. I was in Brooklyn, Manhattan, Connecticut. I went to jail in Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, organizing nursing home and hospital workers. I mean, the insanity of that, the people who take care of you, people don't want to pay, and the cops were beating us up. It's fascinating. But that was... I learned so much doing that work. And yeah.
Yeah. And now fast forward to when I eventually meet you.
Yes.
It's when you had founded Count Me In for Women's Economic Independence. So again, a recurring theme, working to organize women and to empower them financially by creating a vehicle to invest in the businesses they were creating.
Yep. You know what's come up for me recently about this, listening to all the Me Too discussion and Time's Up? Women who own their own companies don't get harassed because they're the boss. Hmm. And I didn't realize it at the time. But I knew it gave you a freedom and a sense of self-worth that was different from working for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I have watched this and been listening to and am very supportive of what's going on and realizing how important it is that girls and women understand that in addition to all the laws and the rules we need on the books about how we are treated, we also need to keep getting ourselves in positions where people wouldn't dare because we're paying them.
You're the boss. You're in charge.
You're the boss. You're in charge. And it changes the dynamic.
And it helps to change the culture because then I'm not only your boss, but also could be your equal. Just thinking about being on a corporate board, right? We're on the board together. The same, you know, I'm not here to get coffee.
Right.
we're here together. We're equal. So it changes the power dynamic as well. And so that's why it's important to also have physical representation of women, of ethnic diversity, all of that, because then it changes the balance of power.
It absolutely does. I think we saw that also recently when Senator Gillibrand called out the president and he said the disgusting thing back to her. And historically, we would have waited for some male leader in the party to say something. She just talked right back to him because she's a U.S. senator.
Right.
Totally different than, you know, all the other people.
Somebody
that
having
he was
to come
trying
and defend your honor.
Exactly. She could just like talk to him like right here. It was it was like incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never witnessed that mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's changing.
So what are your, as we're talking about this learned behavior. Lurie talks about taking her children to all of the actions, from the very small things of organizing. I try to take my goddaughter and helping to staple things, right? So they learn that there's work that happens of organizing. It's not just the standing in front of people and talking, but it's also the preparation, and that you have to prepare yourself and study before you get to the meeting and things of that nature. Do you see a disconnect of people not involving? Is what Lurie doing and what your parents did something that people don't do often? And I would say
I think it depends on how cynical parents are. And how invested they are. It brings to mind an incredible moment I had when Nelson Mandela first came to New York after he was freed from prison in the, I think it was 1991. And he came to New York. There was that huge event. There was a ticker tape parade. I was on the welcoming committee. And there was a rally in Harlem. And it was packed with people, just everywhere. And he was on a flatbed truck, and he kept saying, "I want what you have." And everybody is standing there going, "What is he talking about? I want what you have." He kept saying that. What he wanted was the right to vote. And when he finally said it, everybody on the street was like, it was both anticlimactic, but also like a smack in the face to everyone that here we are, we have this right, and we're not all exercising it. And here he's been in prison for as long as he's been, in addition to getting rid of apartheid, because he wanted the right to vote. And I think that is what we forget too often about the system that we live in, and that is one of the key ways that we express what we want and the kind of country that we want. And it's gotten very complicated, and, you know, God knows the Declaration of Independence people never could have dreamed of social media and all that stuff. But it's still true. It's still true. With the horror that we're living through, we know that it can change, because we have that right and that power if we choose to exercise it. And I think that is why it's so important that parents show their children how this happens, and why our system is so important, and why the rule of law is so important, all of those things. Because while democracy is a living, changing, breathing thing, there are rules about it and ways to express yourself that everyone needs to know about. But children particularly need to understand that there's a way to do this where everybody has a say. So I would say to all parents, you know, to take the, I did work with people after Take Your Daughters to Work Day about take your kids to the polls or something. Some I think they did it in Arizona or something like that. But it's very important that they see actually how it happens.
Yeah.
And that it works, you know.
And that there's recourse when things don't go your way. There's other options that you can take, and there are other things that you can do to raise your voice. Now, thank you so very much for joining us on Sunday Civics. I appreciate you for saying yes.
Oh, absolutely. I was so happy to see you that day. You were on MSNBC. I was so happy to see you. I hadn't seen you in a while. So yeah. It was lovely.
I think the last time we saw each other was the Democratic Convention.
That is right. That is absolutely right. Yes, it is. Wow.
So that was some time ago.
Yes, it was.
All right. Thank you so much, Nell. And you can find more about Nell Merlino on our website at SundayCivics.org, where you can find her complete lovely bio and find ways to get in contact with her should you need to. But she has an amazing story, which we couldn't get to all of it today, but you can certainly go to the show notes of this episode and read more about Nell Merlino's amazing career. We'll be right back on Sunday Civics here on SiriusXM Urban View, Channel 126. So, Nell is a perfect example, and her story, her family story, is a perfect example Now I'm not saying you have to, you know, go all in and be, dragging your kids to all of the political meetings and, you know, everything like Dell's family did. And even like Laurie does her kids. But at least the minimal that you do in terms of civic action, you know, if you have children in the house, if you have nephews and nieces, to be able to display that information and affirm young people's voices, even if you think is wrong and, you know, bullheaded and, you know, any kind of that, but at least that they have a voice and a say in our democracy is important, don't you say?
It's very important.
When did you learn your voice?
Oh, Lord. Fourth grade, when I got booted out of Miss Goldberg's class because I was like, no, right is right and wrong is wrong, and respect is a two-way street. You're going to respect me, too. And she was like, no, you're going to sit down and shut up. And I was like, And then I had to go see Mr. Williams.
I'm mad that you actually remember their names and everything.
Oh, yes, I remember everybody's name. I remember who did me wrong.
Oh, yeah,
anyway, right. See, that's what happens when you don't back up your young kids and affirm their voice. See what just happened? Just saying.
Yes. So, and this is now, you know, moving to adults, because a lot of people who are listening to the show talk about how when you guys email us or connect with us, talk about how, you know, you yourself have not used your voice, how you have not been civically engaged previously. And these are, you know, some listening to the show or this last election or others has been the first time that you've been actually engaged. And so these same principles apply. Right. So, you know, to other people, other adults that, you know, are not using their voice, that, you know, are not being engaged, to be able to be that model of behavior is important, because this democracy will moves based upon participation, whether you participate or not.
Be a verb, not a noun. Got to take action.
Because it's going to happen. You know, the government is going to move. Politics are going to move. All of that's going to happen whether you participate or not.
And you're fond of saying, don't let it happen to you.
Don't let government and politics happen to you.
Say it.
You know, you have to be engaged, active, and involved in order to put. And I know, I can tell you, even being in this current environment, that it can seem as if, you know, your voice doesn't really matter.
Nope.
Feels particularly like it. If you have, you know, leadership in your local government, in your federal government, that seems to want to, like, destroy your livelihood.
I'm tired.
But if you don't, if you do not provide opposition, then that just provides them an easy way to move forward.
So you got to make it hard for them?
I'm saying.
Amen.
I'm saying.
Don't let it happen to you.
So thank you guys for listening. Just before we go, I have a goal. So you guys know in doing, so I do about 4 or 5 hours of research for our shows a week. And one of the things I do is I read a lot. And if you read a lot, and this is everything from newspapers to blogs, and I'm sure you guys listening to this show, but if you read more as well and read more books, read more history, it actually helps to prepare you. And if, you know, if you've been a follower of mine for a long time, you know how much I love books and, you know, read stuff. So to help me sometimes also, I listen to books. So I love hard copy books. I actually like it when you actually crack open a book. And I know for those of you know who are bibliophiles like me, cracking the spine of a book is like, you know, like people like Flint and it's like, no, I actually like doing.
Do it. I like cracking your knuckles.
I know. I actually like doing it. But then looking at it on a bookcase, it looks like whatever. But
looks
we have a sponsor for the show.
A sponsor? Yay.
Yeah. So if you don't have time or believe you don't have time to read books and you want to listen to a book, you can get a free trial of Audible. on your phone and you can listen while you're at the gym, while you're at work, while you're traveling, while you're cooking or whatever. Just go to sundaycivics.org/audible, AUDIBLE. Mm-hmm. And you can get a free audiobook. Ooh. So you can, the book I'm reading right now, I'm actually reading the physical book of mm-hmm. this, but you can listen along with me and we'll discuss it later because we're going to have the author on. Richard Rothstein's The Color of Law.
Oh
yeah, that talks about how government segregated mm-hmm. American housing discrimination and things like that. So we're gonna actually have him on in a couple of weeks.
Oh, this is gonna be
so
wonderful.
If you want to listen to the book now, if you don't have time to read, you can go to sundaycivics.org/audible, mm-hmm. and you can use your free credit to download that book, mm-hmm. And it'll be a book club.
Right? Ooh, and we'll
and
be
so and you'll be ready to have this conversation when we have him on to talk about housing and segregation and how that's affected housing policy and affordability and, you know, why communities are a certain way. So go to sundaycivics.org/audible, get your free book, maybe, you know, do Richard Rothstein's The Color of Law, and we'll have a conversation with him. So thank you guys for listening. I appreciate you for listening. We'll be back next Sunday here on SiriusXM Urban View, Channel 126 at 10 a.m. Yes. June.
Amen.
We'll be back. Set your alarms and listen to the show. Thank you guys very much for your feedback. And we'll see you again next Sunday.
Next Sunday.